Now, funny enough, I think it's a cool little icebreaker, but my homie called me earlier today, and he was like, he feels bad for the newbies getting into the industry. And he was saying because they have to do so much to get in. He's like, when I got in, he said, I really only got three certs now. He was like, Security Plus, CISSP, and CISM. And, you know, he's been in a decade and some change now. So he got a Security Plus thing like 2021. And I was like, yeah. I was like, back when we got in.
That's when I got mine, too, in 2021. It was, I mean, yeah, things have changed big time. Yeah. And it also was like, you don't know what to do to get in. Like, you almost have to be specific enough to follow a job description, which isn't good for you, right? Because if you don't get that job, it's back to the drawing board. But, yeah, it's sticky. Sticky out here.
You funny for that one. I see one of your top bullet points.
Period.
So yeah, I kind of left that part alone, but we'll get into that. But I was telling him, I was like, yeah, unfortunately, like, it's not us the ones that's doing the hiring. So, you know, that's why it's different. I was like, if it's me hiring, I'm looking at different things. A lot of these recruiters, some of them don't know what they're looking at. ATS is messing up the thing, and you got all these people telling you to get all these different certifications and all this and that, and you really don't know anything. Because I came across a post on LinkedIn today, and this guy was talking about how he'd been searching for a security job for 2 years, and he was, you know, kind of had his head down because he didn't get this SOC role. They had like two openings, and he was like, hey, I got the Security Plus. Apparently that means nothing. I got my associates. Apparently that means nothing. And I kind of felt bad for him, but at the same time, I think another guy was like, well, you just need to keep on applying. And I lost the post, but I want to apply, I mean, comment on there too, because I'm like, okay, well, if it's taking you 2 years, then there may be some issues with your skill set.
Either interviewing or your resume. I mean,
both.
There's a lot of contributing factors against you, which makes you have to make sure that you got all your ducks in a row.
It's always the resume. If I show you right now,
I already believe you.
I'm in that Black IT group.
Yeah.
Honestly,
in it too. I be seeing their stuff.
Man, a lot of people don't want to pay for help, and so they just want to get the advice of a lot of people who probably, it's like, you really cannot get any, if you had a navigation system, let's say you had Apple Maps, Google Maps, Waze, TumTum, all the others, you know, we have. If all five of them are telling you to go somewhere, most of the time they may not be all telling you the same direction.
Mm-hmm. But they still get you to the same destination.
Could.
Yeah.
But it may take you longer. So the best one may be, prime example for us is, hey, take 380 to the tollway and take it to where we at now. Whereas somebody else, it told them, take Legacy all the way down, where they had to hit a million lights. So it took them 20 minutes longer to get here. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, kind of that's how the advice got to be, like, based on your pace and what you are willing or not willing to do. Like, my guy was telling me the girl that he hired, she used to be an intern for him, and she has her master's, she had a blog, she had like 2 or 3 certs. He was like, man, she had to do a lot. And she's asking me, like, what I got. I was like, this is what I have. I didn't really have to do all that just because of the time that we got in. And I was also talking about how the days of them, I was like, it's not a lot of pure entry-level roles anymore.
It's not, unless you're a recent grad, which is why I tell people, and that's just my personal opinion and my prerogative, that you should go to school so that you have an easier chance of getting in, because there are programs designed for recent grads. Whether you have a bachelor's, a master's, an MBA, a PhD, there are all these entry-level programs that could potentially align better. But the thing is that I would say is, before you even decide to do that, you need to already have like a running list of all these employers who have programs like that, so that you can be, you don't miss the opportunity, because there's no point in you doing that and then you miss the opportunity because you weren't connected or you didn't know which employers had those type of programs. So that's why I say what I say. It's not for everybody though. It's absolutely not. But for me, that's the safest way to get the most bang for your buck.
No, I agree. And I would say, like, this is a He's a current client, but really a past client because I already helped him get an internship. But he's now just knocking him out because he's still in school, so he gets to take advantage of these.
And that's an easy hit for you because one of the requirements is that most times is that you have another semester of school left. So if you're in school, cool.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you have to graduate. You can't just be in school. You have to be about to graduate. Otherwise, it's a waste of your time. They're not going to give you that offer if it's contingent upon successfully completing, you know, your academics.
Yeah. And then my baby brother, he's starting to get interviews for internships as well. And I mean, you know, we'll have the people in the comments. Like, if you're listening right now or you're watching right now, I know that you guys are against school. But
was there something on? Oh, okay.
I might have to start the pod with that. But listen, it's getting hard. You have all these people trying to sway you from not going to school, and then you will not be qualified for these roles that have to supersede and govern AI because you're not going to have the schooling to do it. Trust me. That's they bait and switch.
And every employer doesn't have programs that are targeted for recent grads, which is why it's important for you to start getting on LinkedIn and knowing who is doing what. So that, again, if you say, okay, next year this time I want to go to school, then this year you need to be figuring out which employers have those programs. You need to start connecting with those recruiters, people that graduated those programs, like all of that. Ask all of the questions so that you're putting yourself in a good position. And another thing is that those are the entry-level jobs. Like, they're for them. They're for recent grads or early in career. It's not a lot of early in career programs, but there are a lot of recent grad programs, I'll say. There are, like, some programs, too, if you're, like, transitioning over from maybe a non-tech-related background. I think Google has one. I don't know the name of it. But I think Google has one where you can learn how to be, like, a PM or a PJ or something like that.
Yeah, they got Coursera them got a lot of stuff they're working with Google on. And I don't know. I mean, like I said, it's interesting. Everyone has their own opinion. And I think this will be one of the ones that if we decide to do some more streaming – where we could, speaking of, matter of fact, you're watching this right now, if you're in the DFW area, unpaid producer internship, if you want to come work with the show, holler at me. Send me an email. But I think that'll be a cool one to talk about because everybody's going to have their opinions.
Going to have their opinion on it.
But yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of like the beginning of this. We're really going to get into some cool stuff. Discord had a breach. OpenAI copycat. Student loan forgiveness is back on.
I meant to send that to you. Yesterday, the Discord one.
Really?
Yeah.
I found some stuff like, what's behind the layoffs? We got Meg suing Milagro. And a bunch more stuff. But hold that thought. And if you're driving to work right now, listen to this.
Fatal Beauty.
R.I.P. Tate.
Huh? What's that your name was?
Now this was now this is the time to be around when Migos was out like this.
I think I was in high school. Hannah Montana. I got Miley, I got white, I got Miley, I got white. I've been trapping.
We got a lot of old stuff on here. Hannah Montana, Hannah Montana, Hannah Montana. I'm gonna switch it to the next thing, Thomas. Get through the hood.
Hey man, you know it's levels to the slum shit.
Mm-mm. Isn't that it?
Shout out all my slums worldwide.
Listen.
Oh, this is Yo Girl Gon' Get by K Camp.
Turn up, your hoe will get slayed. Your hoe will get slayed.
I will go see him. I love K Camp.
Your hoe will get slayed. Bring her around these slums. Your hoe will get slayed. Yo ho will get slayed.
You know what? Hold on.
Yo ho will get slayed. Yo ho will get slayed.
Yo ho will get slayed. Yo ho will get slayed.
Yo ho will get slayed. Yo ho will get slayed. Bring her around these slums. Yo ho will get slayed. Yo ho will get slayed. Yo ho will get slayed.
You already know strong arm slum gonna come recruit.
R.P. Rich Homie.
Dang, he did put out some classics.
Think it's a game.
My big bitch trying to make him something. Ain't no telling he'll do for the pay.
Ain't no telling.
Souffle, I'm straight. I stay my plate. Shot day, I'm a smooth operator.
I drop.
We need some DJ tags to hit after that.
Do you know what pisses me off? When people used to what was it? Hit a dab or what is it?
The dab? Me?
Oh, that used to make it just makes me so mad. It's so lame. Oh, especially if you don't do it right.
And you remember like the videos of, like, the old man hitting the dab everywhere?
You know who also went hard? I was about to say some real ridiculous stuff. Rick Ross.
Oh, yeah. Went. He still went hard. Bitch down.
Yeah. Bitch
down. What they was doing that made you mad?
I don't know. Look at my down. Look at my down. Like today, if I see somebody do that, I'm gonna get irritated. Look at my down. 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 Get in there, get in there. 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 We're gonna do two new songs and then we rock it.
The real Trap Selena.
Hey, 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 face pretty, I could win her. Hey, hey, hey. I know I could probably win a pageant, baby. They say I'm attractive. I be feeling like a magnet, baby. I'm just young and
what
wretched,
you think of
baby.
The album? Love it when you smack it, don't baby. Say nothing crazy. Money, cut it short, Tony Braxton, baby. Huh? What you think of the album? Bitch can't do
like me. Hello?
Nothing? Hello? Like me.
Hello?
I know these hoes. You said what?
I'm putting belt to ass. If a bitch was. Yeah.
Brown. I was bad in fucking school, now I'm trying to dodge a sin. Just walk out the lavish store, pay a shoe.
$12.50.
You wanna boss up your life?
All I gotta do is get in with me.
I don't even pay to get in the club.
They know I'm a walking ticket.
I'm presidential leaving the club.
We ain't stopping at no lights.
You wanna be a boss?
You gotta pay the price.
Left wrist on frost, look like a
bag of ice.
I'm driving a Bentley Bentayga like I don't love my life. I'm in that thing shifting, and I'm lane switching.
Bitches big as I, standing on straight business. Dunking on niggas' ass like Blake Griffin.
He keep talking, bro, gon' leave his face missing. Baby, he's all white, these ain't no hirachi. Bad bitch, 50 flow, eat hibachi. I got 10 missed calls, all my bitches mad at me. Valet Park Designer District, I'm going straight to gallery.
Just feeling, yup.
Phone ringing, yup. Niggas hating, yup. Jury blinging, yup. Just feeling, yup. Phone ringing, yup. Niggas hating, yup. Jury blinging, yup.
Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and we got another man.
Cyber Shorty in the house. Hey, 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 hey.
It's episode 192, if I ain't mistaken. And yeah, man, I appreciate y'all for rocking with us. Y'all know what to do if y'all listening in y'all car on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, iHeart, wherever. Leave us a comment, share it out, follow the podcast. And if you're on YouTube right now, hit thumbs up, hype us up. All the fun stuff. Leave us a super chat.
Hype me up.
But, guys, while we were talking earlier, you hear at the beginning, I thought it'd be pretty cool to talk about how we got here. Now, you've heard my story probably a couple of times. And if you remember when she first came on the show, that's almost 2 years ago. She gave her something for
you? No.
Okay. Mm-mm. If you remember when she came on the show the first time, that's when we talked about her journey. So I thought about we just start the pod off talking about how we got into cybersecurity.
I think that's a great idea. A lot has changed.
The truth.
The truth. So it's my turn to go?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So as I stated before, I got into cybersecurity because I was tired of being broke. Believed the hype. That was my reason. I'm not going to lie about it. Money motivates me. And so that was my reason. I have my undergrad in criminal justice, and that was not working out well for me. From a financial perspective, I just wasn't seeing a lot of opportunities that fit under that degree. And so my plan was to go to law school, but I think I was too chicken to really pursue the LSAT fully. So I didn't. And then years and years went by, and I was like, okay, I got to go back because I don't want to work in customer service for the rest of my life. And so, I went back. I started it with tuition reimbursement with one of my employers. And from there, I actually quit that employer. So I didn't stay with them for the full degree. I quit when I had probably about a little bit over 6 months left of school. So I quit and joined a boot camp for A+. Right. That was hilarious. I knew that it probably wasn't going to line up well, but I was so desperate at the time to just get a certification and to have something under my belt besides my degree when I started school. So I did that boot camp literally up until like the last, I think it was like 16 weeks. I did at least 12 to 14 out of the 16 weeks, and then I dropped because I was like, I'm not taking that exam. Once they said it was two exams, I just knew for a fact that that wasn't going to work for me. I'm not the best test taker. I can pass an exam, but I'm not the best test taker. I have a lot of test anxiety. And so being that that was my first one, I was like, no. So I dropped out of there and I started studying for the Security Plus. And so this was like a right around July. And so right around the time that I dropped out, I actually got an offer for an internship in the SOC. So I did that from July to January. And so during that time frame, I was part-time. So I was obviously trying to find a full-time opportunity. I was interviewing. My first offer was, what's the other consulting company? Not Deloitte. What's the other one?
PwC, KPMG, EY?
One of them. But I had an offer from one of them. I can't remember who it was. But I got an offer from one of them, and then that's when the offer started rolling in. So I got three offers, basically. And the first, I was thirsty, y'all. I was thirsty. I was taking everything. Like, I didn't care if I was going to be at them. Like, I just need some experience. At least I can use this and pivot off of that. So I accepted the first one, and then I turned around and was like, you know what? I'm going to decline because I got another opportunity that's doing something that I can actually do. So the two other offers that I got were for recent grad programs. And so that was the route that worked for me to break into the field. So first job was a technical business manager. I was helping with the ServiceNow platform. Second job was customer success manager over Dynamics and Power Platform. Third role was a security cost solution architect focused in on the Defender security stack. And then my fourth role was a cybersecurity instructor where I teach Linux, A+, Network Plus, Security Plus. So all of those lovely courses to my students. And now I'm here co-hosting the pods. That's a quick story on how I got here today.
Yeah, very quick, quick. Because I know we talked about like pros and cons and you found out what you liked and what you didn't like.
Absolutely. I did not like working in the SOC, specifically under vulnerability management. I feel like if I would have done a little bit more incident response, I would have been good. But, oh, my God. There's a lot of pressure working on a vulnerability management team that I don't think people understand because you are responsible for patching and identifying and notifying the appropriate people when there is something going on in the environment that is a threat. And so I had anxiety every Tuesday when it was Patch Tuesday. That's basically when Microsoft releases all of the updates and the patches that you need to make. And so I would just be super anxious going through our assets and just looking to see what we had that I had to then go back and tell these people that you need to remediate this because of X, Y, and Z, and it needs to be done by this date. And then just communicating to people the vulnerability that the organization is under. It's also difficult as well. So people don't want to hear that they need to patch up all the cool things that they've built. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear that they need to get a new server. They don't want to do any of that for the most part. And so it was just really hard bridging that gap. There were a lot of cultural differences as well. So I knew for a fact I didn't want to do that. I knew for a fact I didn't want to do technical business management because I was bored to death. Change management was so good for me, and I got a lot of exposure and experience there. From like that perspective, I did get to see like this is how you successfully implement change in an org. But outside of that, absolutely not. I was not interested in that. I felt like an administrative assistant in a way. I didn't like that. And then customer success management, that was starting to get me more in a customer's face, having some of those strategic conversations. So I did appreciate that. And then switching over to the security side was just like the icing on top. I actually got to talk about things that I care about and things that I'm interested in. So it took me a couple of pivots to finally figure out what it is that I wanted to do. But I feel like I knew that coming out of school. Like, I knew without a doubt, I had no idea what it was that I wanted to do because my classes were across the board and I was interested in a lot of stuff, but I just couldn't pinpoint what exactly. Like, some people graduate and they're like, okay, this is what I want to do. I didn't know. So I was just accepting anything and getting my experience and moving on from it.
Yeah, nah, for sure. I mean, people already know about me, like help desk, working in GovTech for 2 years and in Shreveport and moving to Dallas with the hopes of getting in security within a year, finally getting my first cybersecurity role at McAfee. And I'll say it again, this is like, I don't hear people talk about this a lot when it comes to getting into cybersecurity or whatever. Or let me backtrack from cybersecurity, getting a job in general. When you typically know when you apply to jobs, they'll say, hey, do you want to be notified, like being our talent community, be notified, we got stuff coming up or jobs coming up. Well, when it came to Intel, I clicked yes. And that's almost 10, yeah, really close to 10 years ago. That was in 2016 when I went to the event that Intel had and pretty much down the street on headquarters in Plano of Preston. And it's like, yeah, we're having like this hiring event. And so since they had that there, I left work. At the time, I was working at Addison.
Clock it. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do. Sometimes you got to figure out how to pivot and move around because you're blocking your blessing.
In fact, I was dressed up good, too, so nobody asked, like, where I was doing or where I was going. And I went. It wasn't a lot of people. Got to talk to the manager. He seen my face. Honestly, like, the old school way is the best way.
Wait, pause. Y'all peep this. He did not say it was a virtual interview. This was in person.
Yeah, but you know,
you got to be built differently to interview in person.
But it wasn't even an interview. It really was just hand your resume in and then they go review it. But you get this to talk to people.
Got you, to make that first impression.
Mm-hmm. But what benefited me was that Intel at this time was actually beginning to split and go Intel McAfee.
Mm.
And so previously Intel handled like all the SOC stuff and like offshore with, I forgot where they were at. And so they needed to spin up a new SOC. So I happened to have a good resume. I happened to have the experience that I had gained in the NOC over the last, what, 6-7 months. And that was how my journey started. And the best, worst SOC you probably can ever work in.
Why? Best, worst.
Maturity level. It was negatives.
They were low.
Yeah. Nobody knew what they were doing. So imagine you saying, hey, I want to stand up a SOC. But then you make the person a manager who's never managed a SOC.
Mm.
So they don't know what to
do. That's a lot of trial and error. Yeah.
They don't know what to do.
Did y'all break a lot of stuff?
We spend most of our days responding to possible ILCs of WannaCry.
Mm.
That's what we did. So I was a part of.
Like, so you at least that. You got to have some of that exposure and experience. You can talk about it.
Luckily, I was off when WannaCry happened. I think over the
not
weekend.
Luckily.
Yes.
You ain't want to be in the field.
We didn't have no processes.
Exactly.
Because when I came back to work the next week, literally all we was doing was taking all these IPs, looking at them, and sending them to the networking team. I had seen so many IPs that week. I said I closed my laptop and I didn't open it until I went back to work the next week because it was just overkill.
Burnt out. Yeah.
And no, it was just bad. It kept on hiring repeatedly people that never had ran a SOC.
So did they figure it out eventually?
No.
Bye.
They didn't.
You left before that.
They spent a whole bunch of money on this brand new SOC. And I still got it in my photo album in here back in, what was that, late 2017, December 2017. Spent all this money on a new SOC just for to lay us off the next year, which was crazy. It was like, why y'all invested in that, but y'all never gave us training? Like, we used one of the worst sims ever. And we kept asking them, hey, how do we use this? What are we looking for? So it took one of my coworkers at the time. He's the person that already had SOC experience. He should have been running the SOC. I told him, hey, he should be running it. And they didn't want him because he wasn't going to be a person that was going to kiss ass. I'm just going to tell you straight up. Like, he also, through him, I got to witness how corporate America could be.
How people behave and stuff.
Because he was a contractor. He came in one day. He said, man, Unry, man, I almost lost my job. Because he was going through, you know, a lot of contractor hire stuff. And they were going back and forth. And so when he got to work, and I ain't tell people this, after the guy, let me backtrack something because it's hilarious. The first manager they hired, he never ran a SOC before. He didn't know what he's doing. And so they thought it was brilliant to tell us that Instead of them telling us he was just fired, they told us that his account got compromised when he was in India, which was a lie.
That's not even a good lie. And when so, you clearly work in the SOC and you can look that stuff up.
We couldn't look it up. We didn't have all the access to none of this stuff. But that wasn't even the point. That was besides the whole point. After that, they hired another guy from the FBI who didn't know what he was doing from a SOC standpoint. Maybe from a physical security standpoint, he did.
And that is an important thing to think about, because just because somebody worked for the FBI doesn't mean that they're going to be suitable for a SOC role if you don't have any experience.
And then, so he was the FBI guy was the one where my coworker came to work one day, and he looked at him because I guess they had agreed. I guess he agreed with HR, like whatever he's going to be paid, and he told him, "You're welcome." And so that's what pissed my coworker off when he said, "I almost lost my job today."
Wait, oh, because the guy was basically saying, like, "You need to thank me."
Pretty much.
Basically, yeah.
And he was like, "Yeah, this ain't gonna last long." And he ended up landing something else and dipping. And right after that, that's when I realized, yeah, the game is cooked. Because a little after that, I was let go. My other coworker was like, as I'm coming in, it's a movie. Like, I would love to shoot a biopic about this particular day. As I'm walking in, my coworker's walking out with boxes, mouth and good luck to me. Like, no lie.
And you probably like, what you mean, good luck?
I think I was even probably late or something that day too. So it was like one of them days where you felt like something was going to happen. And I went in there with HR and, you know, they was like, is this good? And I should have, knowing what I know now, I should have said, I want a 6-month severance.
Should have negotiated.
Because they were negotiating. They weren't like just saying take it or leave it. And so that's what I should have did. But I was young and I was just under the mindset like, oh, fine, something shouldn't be so hard.
It wasn't that hard back then.
No, it was.
Back then?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Do you think?
It was a lot.
Compared to today?
It was a lot. One, because I felt like they didn't want to pay me what I wanted to be paid. I had all these different interviews. I had a lot of people that didn't look like me interviewing me. So back then, these was a lot of in-person things where I felt like, okay, y'all just brought me up here to say y'all interviewed me because you knew what my experience was from the screening call. Why would you get to the end and say we want somebody more experienced when you knew what my experience was?
Yeah, when you had it available to you basically ahead of time.
Texas Instruments ran me around for the loop saying, oh, you got the job just for them to start ghosting me. Well, once it was for Texas Instruments, but it was through this company called Talent 101. But I dodged the bullet because when I started working at Optiv, one of my teammates came from Texas Instruments and said, yeah, you dodged the bullet. They hired a woman that didn't know what she was doing. Mm. And I was just like, that's why in the macro aspect of things, if you take a step back, it don't be as bad as it feels in a moment. But in that moment, it felt bad because I made the video. I might try to put it here, or gosh, I can go search for it. It's like 100 jobs told me no. And really, it was more than 100 companies. But I still got the spreadsheet and everything in my documents.
I think that another thing that also contributed to me not being successful sooner was absolutely my resume. Absolutely. Like, I know it was my resume. I didn't even know what to put. Like, from coursework and things I'm learning in the program and projects they had us doing, I didn't know what to put. And so what I started doing was using the description on the syllabus. Got smart. Now, see, ChatGPT wasn't out back then. So you had to figure out that wording on your own. But I took all of the objectives, basically, from whatever the project was that they gave us. And I was like, that's what I did. Because that was what I did. That's what they said the objective was. I achieved it. I got an A. Move forward. So I feel like you also have to... You have to be very intentional. You have to be very intentional if you're going to go the school route and use that as your way to leverage yourself into the industry. You have to be mindful of what you're doing, not just from a, oh, I use Active Directory or, oh, I use Wireshark, like, cool beans. But what did you do with those tools? How can you explain that out to yourself so that you can explain it then in an interview?
Yeah. But I also, this is the thing, too, I tell a lot of newbies. I'm straight up with them. Like, hey, to be honest, I was like, I can't tell you when the last time I really used Wireshark at work. Like,
no facts.
I have it, but like I have access to the firewall and it gives me the packets I need. So, I mean, unless we're going to listen to some packets, I don't use it that often. So it's like.
I don't even have it on my resume anymore. Obviously, I can use it, but everything that you're doing a lab on isn't a legitimate tool that you might use in the field. However, you might get someone who is wanting to hire somebody entry level, like the stock was that I was working for, and they were asking me questions about those tools. Cool. So you put Wireshark down. What do you use Wireshark for? What do you use Nessus for? What do you use, I think, Nmap or Zenmap? Like, they were asking me about these different solutions that I had listed. And I mean, literally asking me to see if I was lying, obviously, to test, engage, you know, my expertise. Like, do she know what these tools really do? Okay. And so you might come across people like that where you have to basically prove yourself, like your skill set or your knowledge. So if you're going to put stuff on there, you have to be able to speak to it. You have to, like, and not just, oh, you just use this for that. Like, that's not a good enough explanation. You need to give them enough to where they move on to another topic because you answered the question so well.
Yeah, nah. And funny that you said that. Before I got with Optiv, I was doing all these different interviews, and I interviewed for a company named Securus. Now, context was, the good thing about McAfee is when they laid everyone off, they hooked us up with career services, did us a resume and all this other stuff.
That was nice. People don't do that.
It was cool, but what I'll say is, because it's generalized career help, they don't know how to help in a specific thing that I need help with. It's just generalized. Like, their advice would work better for somebody in a non-technical role. And so my cardinal sin back in the day was, I used to have all these tools I used to have access to, but I hadn't used since I worked help desk. So when I get at Securus, which they purposely interviewed me when my, I don't want to say his name on camera, when my coworker was away, we can call him RJ. When RJ was away, and they grilled me on all these tools, I shouldn't have had them on there because, like, hey, I couldn't remember what they had used them for. And I was like, oh, yeah, Anacam, I used it to, it was pretty much used for multi-factor authentication to send code to the people who were trying to log onto the TSA network, like, to check their OWA. Outlook web access back in the day for y'all youngsters.
Screaming.
to check it in case they can, so they can access it. And there were some other tools I had on there, and I was like no, one of them I messed up when is too. Y'all was like, y'all would not believe this. I messed up on them asking me about blue team and red team. And they was like, oh, what team are you on? I was like, I don't know. I messed up on that too.
I mean, it's better for you to say you don't know than for you to lie and try to make some. They can tell,
but it should have been something I should have known. But the thing is, it was like, back then, I really was like super siloed because I was like, all the information that's like, I can readily go onto YouTube right now. Like, it's a channel Lee put me on. It's like Purple Team channel. Dude got a lot of good technical information on there. That stuff wasn't back there then. Should I have known blue team, red team? Yes. Did I? No. But I feel like questions like that are nitpicky because it really doesn't test like what I should know. It was no scenario type of questions. It was just all questions about the stuff I had on there. So I was just like, yeah, this is trash. But I learned a valuable lesson. It's like, hey, don't oversell yourself.
That, and if you don't know, it's okay to say you don't know. That's the big thing for me. Because I didn't know the answer to 100% of the things that they were asking me. But I would say about 95 to 97% I did. And I was able to speak on it. And I also went over those projects that I knew that they were going to be asking me about because they were listed. So I went back to the paper or whatever it was that the project was, and I looked at, okay, what did you do so that you can explain it to them? So you have to prepare yourself well for interviews. And if you, even if you have three different resumes, you still need to be able to speak to the stuff that's on those three different resumes like the back of your hand.
Right. And while we're on interviews, let's talk about some things that I learned that we also help the clients with, and it's going to be some simple stuff before we get into some of the other fun topics we have. Preparation.
Please prepare. And I mean, like, act like this is a school paper assignment that you're getting ready for. I typically do mine in Google Docs to just save it and, you know, have to worry about all of that. But I'll put down what the mission is, what the value is, what are some of the like different initiatives that they have, if this employee resource groups, for example.
Yeah, or, I got an interview cheat sheet as well.
And I literally have that up. I put in even my answer for why do I want to work for the company, all of that good stuff. I put down some cool things that I seen that they're working on that I can bring up that are relevant maybe to that role, or that you want to bring up things that the person that you're interviewing with may find interesting. Like, just because you're interviewing for a tech company and you bring up a new technology doesn't mean that that person knows about that technology. So you kind of have to be careful with that. But I definitely highly recommend you using or creating like a template that you can use to help you prepare for jobs.
Yeah, like that's so for, funny enough, when I was interviewing that, what some people call it? Not Cimpress, it's the other people. My coworker works there and they work out of squads and I cannot think of their name, but it's a security company. And I was, that security advisor joined. Remember, this is a long time. It's like early this year when I was doing that. And I did a lot of research. So I was able to bring up, oh, y'all just acquired this AI company. How's it going to help y'all with your clients and helping them with detections and all stuff? So at that time, I'd already established, hey, I researched them. I'm interested. I'm invested. And I had answers for all the questions that they had to ask for me. And the same thing happened with Cimpress. Like I researched, oh, okay, they're literally about Active Directory. They had this term I wasn't too familiar with on their site, and I brought it up in one of my answers. I said indicators of exposure. And so that even made the interviewer like say, oh, okay, cool. Because, like, did I get the role? No, but they liked me a lot, and they was just like, yo, we really liked you. We trying to expand. Like, just keep in touch with us, you know, if you around by the time we get some more funding for this stuff. But it's the simple stuff that help you not feel as nervous to where – hey, you might not be that technical, but if you found some good thing that they just talked about, I mean, not something to talk about, but you found something good on the website that is on their blog or news release, you probably can soak up 15, 20 minutes of them asking you questions, and they may not even ask you as hard as a question that they thought you was going to ask just because they like you, mm-hmm. and it'll go over well because you're believing in, like, the mission. Like you said, you have, look at their mission statements, their values, try to.
You forgot elevator pitch.
That too. You're about me.
If you have done an interview and you had a brain fart when they asked you that, it's okay. We all have been there before. But now you know how to answer that question better, right? And if they don't want to know where you was born and raised, okay?
Yes, I'm glad you said
they
that.
They don't want to, and you are not ignorant for thinking that. Seriously, for real, for real. You're not. Interviewing is an acquired skill set. If nobody ever tells you, you'll never know. But they don't care about where you came from, all that irrelevant stuff. They want to know, tell me about you and how your skill set basically aligns to this role. So if you're entry level and you're starting out, talk about some cool things that you did in school, some cool projects. Talk about what made you want to go back to school, why you want to work in the field. If you're in the field, come with it.
Yeah, and I'll say, you can also, what I try to tell people is to try to be solutions-based in the interview. And so one of the ways you can set yourself up for success is doing the initial screening, kind of get all the information you can get from the recruiter based on what she's been given, what's been given to them by the hiring manager, problems, tool stack, all these different things. So you can just start writing things down of problems they may be facing and having your good questions down to ask them because it's a two-way conversation. And so if you ask them, hey, what are some of the things that they're not necessarily problems, but some initiatives or something that I could work on if I'm selected for this role, they may say something that you've already did in the past role and you can highlight it.
Yeah. And even just asking a good question, like don't ask those. I don't even have an example, but don't ask those boring questions that everybody else is asking. Right. The easy ones that you can find on any website when it comes to interview follow-up questions, but definitely make it specific to that role and that purpose. And I also think it's important for you to be able to illustrate your impact on your resume. And I'm still working on that myself. But you have to think much bigger than yourself, maybe even bigger than your role, your team, your org. What is the bigger impact that you all are driving to think and be able to illustrate? Because I see a lot of the times, even when I'm helping like family and stuff with their resume, they're just putting down the job description in terms of things they did, right? And that's not telling how you had any impact, right? Just like, for example, if you worked at Foot Locker, right, and you put on your resume, went and got shoes and took them to customers, well, that's just the job description, right? That's what you're supposed to do. Did you have highest sales this month or that month? So those are the things that you have to start thinking about.
Did you mitigate supply chain issues?
Exactly. Did you stop, what they call the people that be stealing?
Asset protection.
Yes. You know, like, what's your stats? Like, you have to think about things from a larger perspective than just yourself. And that's easier said than done. It is extremely easier said than done. Like, it's an acquired skill set. It's a muscle that you got to learn how to work.
Yeah. Funny that you said elevator pitch, because it reminded me the other day I talked to a recruiter. And I really was BSing it. Not BSing it, but a sense like a lot of times if I have enough time, I may figure out what I want to say that's relevant to their role. And I was answering. I was like in the parking lot of Papado's waiting to pick up my food. And I was answering it. And she was like, "You must have been laid off before. That was good." I was like, because I'd be turning the switch on when I'd be talking to these people, man, and just giving them what they want to hear. Like, they ask you, hey, if they ask you why you want to leave, just say you're looking for either better career opportunities or a role that lines up better with your career goals. Like, just keep it simple.
Better opportunities, my favorite. Every place, better opportunity, period.
Like, you better off just
because that can mean a lot of different things.
Facts.
Yeah. But I think the last thing I'll say about the whole resume and how we got here situation is if you have a community, even if it's just two or three of y'all, y'all can share resumes, right? And look and be like, what you think of this? How can I make this better? Like, I'm not saying that these people are resume gurus, but if between the three of y'all, somebody has a stronger resume.
I would also say find a person that's not necessarily a friend, but a person that's going to give it to you straight.
Yeah, facts.
Like,
and if your friend isn't in the field, then it's going to be hard for them to give you that feedback. But knowing how to illustrate impact in the tech field, again, it's just an acquired skill set. It's something that you hope to get better and better with as time goes on. But those were the things that hindered me was terrible resume, just listing out my job duties, not really knowing how to explain all of the great things that I was doing in an interview or on my resume. And then, ba-da-da, ChatGPT came out.
Listen,
and it was never the same.
You need a friend that can tell you this.
Hear me and hear me good, nigga. I'm here to double down. That shit is a two-pack of ass. The fuck are you talking about? That shit stinks.
I'm calling my man back. Fuck y'all.
That's what you need. You need somebody that can tell you that about your resume, and you're not getting your feelings about it.
You can get in your feelings about it. Do you want to get better or not?
Man, I can go on and on about.
I had a freaking pie chart on my resume. Come on, man. Don't eat me up. Like, I literally had a pie chart on my resume, but it's.
But you're showing proportions?
I was showing, like, where a lot of my skill set was.
Those kind of things work better in, like, those artistic type of jobs.
I was going to say the same thing. Or even if it was me actually giving my resume to someone in person, like, as a cover letter situation. But I'm going to have to find it so I can show you what it looked like. Because I still have a copy of every resume somewhere. Like, every year, I have a copy.
So, we should probably... I have a video where I said, hey, don't do this. So, I review, like, all my old resumes up to a certain point. And it's always fun to go back and look. Because you can directly see why you weren't getting called back.
And that can absolutely... I would have never called me back either. I was just regurgitating. I was literally going to my job description and then copying and pasting what was there.
Facts. Now, I think one of the biggest ones that came out this week was the Discord breach.
Tell us about it.
Let's see.
Was it yesterday? Or did I just see it yesterday?
I don't know if it was yesterday, but it was posted yesterday. So the Discord breach affects at least 70,000 users. Oof. Discord disclosed on Wednesday that around 70,000 users may have had sensitive data like their government ID photos exposed after hackers breached the third-party vendor that the platform uses for age-related appeals. Interested that that's the age-related appeals thing. A Discord user would make an age-related appeal if the platform suspects they may be underage or if they live somewhere that requires identity verification for platforms access. In those cases, users are asked to send a selfie holding their government ID and Discord username to the platform's trust and safety ID. Interesting. Discord said it had contacted the affected users who exposed data may also include the IP addresses, which can reveal the general area where a user lives. According to the news site 404 Media, this data breach may be larger than Discord has reported so far. The hackers claimed that they stole 1.5 terabytes worth of data, which could encompass much more than 70,000 images. A Discord spokesperson told The Verge that these claims are incorrect and part of an attempt to extort a payment. The breach of Discord users' data illustrates the concerns that digital rights activists have expressed over the use of age checks as a means of making the internet safer. Let's see. I'm almost done. So age verification laws, which require users to upload sensitive information like their government IDs exposed in this breach, have been enacted in about half the U.S. states, usually for websites that host corn. Cornhub, one of the most popular adult video sites, has blocked traffic from these states altogether to avoid enforcing age checks. The UK's Online Safety Act, which went into effect in July, requires a broader range of platforms to verify users' ages, including YouTube, Spotify, Google X, and Reddit. Yeah, it's always third party.
Do we think that the future will be... My thing is this. How are we making that a requirement when we don't have a requirement in place to secure that type of data in specific? Like, we know things that you can put into place, but there's no standard to say, I got an easier use case. Are we talking about IDs?
Yeah.
Just IDs?
And because age verification, pretty much. But I got an easier use case.
What?
You know how we use these different sites like a Plaid or whatever to connect your bank account to something else? You can do the same thing. Get access to all 50 states.
What if you can't do it unless you got a bank account?
True. But, hey, that would just be, hey, you cannot use this unless you don't have a bank account. I'm sorry.
I actually prefer when you're able to link and sync things up that way, where I don't got to type in my credential, all of that foolishness.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Hey, connect to all 50 DMV's databases.
They're going to have to spend that money, though.
That's fine.
They don't want
it's
to.
You'll have to either be put on the end user, the DMV, whoever they want to do for make. Because it's not just for Discord. It could be for everything.
No, facts.
Because you have your PIN.
Agreed.
You have your PIN. You put your PIN and password in. Hey, this is your DMV username logon. Do you want to share your
whatever
digital ID information with them?
I like that idea. But they don't have no money or the technology.
They have the money. They got the technology. They just don't want to. Everybody, like, it's not, I mean, with as much as they talk about AI, this shouldn't be so hard to do.
Agreed. What is it? OTR? OCR. Optical character.
What you talking about, Willis?
Resolution. Where they use AI to pull, like, content from whatever it is, like a doc or a picture.
I don't know. You might have to look that up.
I think it is OCR. Let me see. OCR, optical character recognition, as text recognition or text extraction. So allowing you to extract printed or handwritten text from images such as pictures. Such as pictures. I just lost where I was at.
Such as pictures?
Words, text lines, paragraphs, text blocks, basically from text. Posters, street signs, product labels. Yeah. So, again, AI can do it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we're always going to see these third-party things, but it does suck, though, because... how did they release it? And did Aura let people know that, hey, these people got your information?
Quickly.
But that's the thing, too. But with these, and that's another one, and we may need to do a real deep dive discussion on Discord. Because I always felt like Discord, I do like that it does have some security measures in place, but I always felt like it was the Wild Wild West.
It's like Kick.
I think it's... Kick on steroids.
I would agree too. You just gotta be careful out here in these online streets. I will always bring up a dark horror story, so just know that. But just know where there's a will, there's a way. And the type of people and exposure and things and chats and different Discord topics that someone underage could potentially be exposed to, you know, I'm gonna bring it back there every time.
I know. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. It's like, hey.
Because these kids, I mean, they do be in Discord.
Or,
sure. They do.
They can.
And they be in there talking crazy.
If you got elderly parents or somebody, you use their thing. You say you're them. So you on Discord.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm not a lot. Like, when we had to sign up on MySpace and Facebook, we had to, I think, say we was older than what we was to make the account. And back then, they didn't validate. You just had to be smart enough. Okay, cool.
Just had to put the right year
I'm just saying I'm born in 1990 or 1989.
Yep.
So... I mean, kids gonna be kids. We got around all this stuff with the proxies and everything else, so they just gonna do the same thing that we used to do. So, I mean, I can't really be too mad at him.
Speaking of kids, I got a good one about some teenagers. So, we have now entered a new era of crime where teenagers are launching ransomware attacks on nurseries. Foolishness, right? Foolishness. So, imagine waking up and finding your child's photo and address posted on the dark web. That's exactly what happened to parents in London. So, two 17-year-olds from Hertfordshire were arrested for hacking into Kiddo, a nursery chain in London. They did not just steal emails or passwords. They actually took photos, names, and addresses of 8,000 children. Then they tried to extort, I think, $600,000 in Bitcoin from the company. They called themselves Radiant, and they even started posting pictures of the kids on the dark website when Kiddo didn't pay up. Cyber experts call it a new low, quote unquote, because this time the victims were not CEOs or companies. It was obviously babies. Now, what's wild is how they tried to emotionally manipulate everyone in the process. They weren't obviously just demanding that money. They were calling parents directly, threatening to expose more photos if Kiddo didn't pay. So I feel like that's a little a level of psychological warfare, especially for a parent. Nobody wants to feel exposed like that with their child. No, I don't like that at all. But eventually, after getting dragged online by other hackers for basically crossing a line, they blurred the images, then deleted them entirely, claiming they didn't want to ruin their reputation. I'm not sure what reputation they're talking about, but go off. The attack exposes two huge trends in cyber right now. One, teenagers, young attackers. They are smart, they're tech savvy, and reckless. So with all of that coupled together, trying to get into cybercrime, a lot of them may be seeing ransomware as a game or a hustle, not an actual federal offense. And number two, emotional extortion. So not just locking files anymore, looking for feelings, trying to use fear, shame, or panic as leverage. So clearly, if a nursery can get hit, nobody's safe. Every business, even one that deals with kids, needs to make sure that they're taking data protection seriously, because hackers don't care about your size. They care about your vulnerability. So, yes.
Yeah, that's one I got to tell Jeri about. She all in the cyber psychology. She talks about these things that people believe are innocent that they're posting. And
I actually saw that post too, especially like when kids are going back to school. So now somebody can just go up there and steal your kid if the school security ain't tight.
I will give schools better. I'll say they have gotten
a lot more stricter in light of all of the shootings, the school shootings and stuff. Because at my school, like you, when I was, obviously, a long time ago, when I was in elementary school, you could, like, parents could come up and have lunch, breakfast with their kids. There was more freedom to roam around mm-hmm. the school. And then I want to say by the time I finished, you had to be buzzed in. You couldn't even get in the door.
See, yeah,
and, that's how it was. And then when you did get in the door, you had to go directly to the office because they could see you. Like, you couldn't come in and just
that's how it is at my daughter's school. Like, yeah. Hey, let us see your ID.
Yep.
Come in, and they all behind bank teller glass.
Exactly. Yep.
It's like you walking in inside of a bank or something. Now it wasn't like that last year, but I'll give them a little bit more credit on that. But I just do think, I think people should just make more private groups and share the pictures. I know you'd be one of the.
I agree. Make a Facebook page or a person like a private like a group page. You know.
But the only crazy thing about that is like the scary thing is you never know when there's a hater lurking.
And yeah, so even that you could potentially have in a group and not even shared and sent your picture to somebody else. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, it's all
there. But those are the risks that you take when you put your babies online. You gotta be careful. And this isn't even on the parents. Their kids was at daycare. They didn't post them online. Their kids was at daycare. So what? You don't even know what type of pictures those are. Are these just like still images on cameras when people was getting their diapers changed, when people are eating?
That is, but
like.
And that actually brings up another use case is like how many people, I mean, who is doing security assessments on daycares?
Facts.
On CNN.
Because the trend today is that, oh, we got cameras. Y'all can watch us. We got cameras. But how are you securing those cameras? We know that they don't have top flight security of the world, Craig, in mm-hmm. a daycare. They don't.
But they should.
But they don't.
I'm going to say they should. I would say it needs to be
decent. Probably like a little Amazon situation, a little TikTok joint.
But see, this is the thing, though.
And that's nothing against them. I mean, I'm just saying they don't have the best security.
No, no, I'm not even saying that. Because if you think about it, if you somehow manage to get into the daycare, you can find out where their access point is and just plug in. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they don't have poor security.
They have poor security in general.
No, no, no. I said port.
Port. You said they don't have.
Yeah, I said don't have
no,
port.
No, and I'm saying in general, the security is just poor.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. It's kind of scary.
That's extreme. And then being contacted saying, if I don't give you money, you're going to expose more, whatever the pictures. I don't even care. It could have been a picture of your kid looking their best. You don't want that picture into somebody's hands that you did not give permission to have that picture.
Not only that, like, think about, also have, like, records of things that's real, like PII.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Medicines or mm-hmm. whatever it may be, conditions, all that. Get mad.
You better get the Liam Nelson going.
It is.
I don't know who you are.
And a lot of parents these days won't even put their kids in daycare if they don't have cameras, right? Because they want to see what's going on. But that's like this brings up to where I live at. Hate it. Keyless. Hate it.
Yeah.
The worst keyless community you could ever imagine. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. You have to be at the door, Bluetooth on, to open the door.
What if it's an EMP that goes off?
What if somebody is chasing me and the dang app don't open up the door in time versus me scanning with a key fob or a key or whatever? Like, it bothers me so bad. What if the network goes down?
That's what I said. What if y'all get hit with an EMP?
What then what? Now can't nobody get in? Everybody locked out? You can't even get in your front door. You can't get in the building. I hate it. I do like keyless communities. I don't like the vendor they chose. 10 out of 10 would not recommend.
Yeah, I know. Only time I've seen the keyless part was, what was that, Alta in Frisco Square?
Like, you should be able to.
They had a little fob.
You should be able, if you're going to be keyless, you should be able to open it from an app not being there, not using Bluetooth is what I'm saying. Like, yeah, I should be in my car.
It should be of your network.
I should be able to be in my car and unlock the door and not have to be by the door and unlock it. And if I'm not there in time, it's going to lock back again. Or now I got to wait until it reads the connection. It's the safety hazard. It really is. You got kids, somebody chasing you.
Yeah.
You got groceries, you got work bags.
No, you're right. You're right. It's crazy. So we've been seeing a lot of stuff about layoffs. I saw something that said, like, we had more layoffs this year than we had in 2024. So I found an article that said, what's behind all these tech layoffs? From Intel to small startups, tech layoffs have been on the rise. Our expert examines what's behind these layoffs and the state of the industry. Yeah, so here it is in the first line. This year has already seen more layoffs than all of 2024 combined. Specifically in tech, headlines speak to 1,000 cuts here. Mass reductions there, as well as constant warnings about AI's displacement of workers. While the reductions in the workforce draw most of the attention, the reality behind those headlines is more complicated. For one, layoffs are not always a sign that a company is failing per se. Particularly in today's economy, layoffs have often been a reflection of companies recalibrating after periods of rapid expansion, rising costs, and shifting strategies. And yeah, I'm glad that said that, because there's a video I came across on YouTube, and the guy, it's like, I gotta find it. It's a good video, and the guy was talking about, like, the truth behind, like, all these layoffs and the plays of, like, they're kind of like putting the wool over your eyes, like, it's not what it seems type of stuff.
I don't think it's because people are not performing. I don't think it's because companies are doing bad. It has nothing to do with that.
They're what, making, like, market, like, profit margins or whatever and just laying off. So tech layoffs this year tell a broader story about the industry's adjustment to pandemic-era growth, AI-driven investment, and economic headwinds that affect firms differently but push them all toward similar workforce reductions. So four factors driving tech layoffs. The first one is slow growth leads to downsizing. And I'm not going to, like, read all of that, but it says, for starters, tech companies overhired during the pandemic, which is true. Firms ramped up hiring to capture demand from remote work, e-commerce, and digital transformation in some cases. They were hoarding workers, just facts, to keep top talent away from competitors in anticipation of a rebounding economy that never fully saw the light of day. That's facts. There are videos, if you type in there right now, people who are working at the FANG companies that said, hey, I was here and I wasn't doing no work. they literally hired us, so Netflix wouldn't hire us, so Meta wouldn't hire us, or so Amazon wouldn't hire us.
And didn't take advantage of it.
They couldn't. Some of them, it was like their first jobs. Think about how many people's first jobs were in some of those FAANG companies in 2021.
Yep.
The AI-centric reshuffle. AI may not be taking jobs, but it does play a role in the story. For now, most tech workers aren't being directly pushed out by AI tools. Instead, companies are cutting costs to free up billions for AI infrastructure and research.
Bada boom, bada bam. That is the truth.
That harkens back to what we talked about last week.
Yeah.
Some of the largest firms, including Intel, Salesforce, and Big M, have made significant layoffs as part of their efforts to invest in AI. However, this transition has been messier than anticipated given the large energy expenditure and expense that comes along with the generative models and massive new data centers. Adoption of AI tools have been uneven, with many workers using them as supplements and companies struggling to identify ways AI can be integrated into workflows at scale, which is facts. Yep. Like, a lot of companies are trying to keep up, but they don't know what they're trying to keep up with.
I was just about to say the same thing. A lot of people are proactively, to me, laying people off, saying they're going to do this with AI, but they don't even really know what they want to do with AI. They don't have people who are trained to do said thing with AI. And on top of that, running AI in your environment, big or small, still costs a lot of money.
Yep. Some companies have also found that breaking up with their employees for their AI fling was not the best business decision. After observing declines in AI, agent customer service quality, and bad implementation, firms reshaping their workforce this year has been less about automation, eliminating jobs, and more about companies reallocating budgets and gearing up for what they see as the next era of growth. Facts. I hate the AI customer service people. They trash. And this one is another unreported aspect of the layoffs puzzle with skills. Firms are cutting headcount while also reshaping their workforce. Employees with outdated or less proficient skills are often first to go. With AI advancing, it is not always clear which new roles will be in demand, but some trends are obvious. Routine administrative tasks are the easiest to automate and are quickly disappearing. I agree with that. In addition, retraining is time-consuming and expensive, and many firms favor employing new talent with the expertise they need at the current moment. Global sources of recruitment, including H-1B visa programs, can often provide high-demand, specialized skills at a lower cost than retraining domestic staff, which I don't really agree with. It was a guy in the comments from the podcast last week, and he was talking about how he knows he's training his replacements. And these people obviously lied on their resumes because he said they don't know what they're doing. And they're offshore people. Mm. And then the last one is economic pressures. Beyond company-level decisions, macroeconomic forces are at play. Inflation has been chipping away at salary budgets and investments all year. Employees have been settling into their roles and prioritizing internal mobility rather than job hopping. However, higher input costs for companies squeeze margins and payroll is one of the most flexible expenses to cut. The ebbs and flows of the job market has put all employees on guard despite their foolproof strategies. In a higher interest rate environment, borrowing is more expensive, which slows down expansion plans and forces companies to get creative on how to get more out of their workforce to remain profitable, even if that means trimming the edges. Investors who were once willing to fund growth at all costs are now demanding more disciplined spending.
That was a good read.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, to sum it up.
I think it's more, too. We can throw a couple other things in there as well. It's a lot of things that are going on that are causing the layoffs. And I think that this is the new climate that we're living in.
I think the boom, the AI boom is going to peak, and then they're going to have to bring some people. Like for certain companies, like we talked about before.
For sure, absolutely. For certain companies. And then you have the people who are still going to continue to try to figure it out. I think, if anything, you should have AI. If you want to have AI in your company, if anything, you should be thinking about user productivity. First thing first. Before we start talking about building other stuff, are your users able to be as productive as they can?
Nah, facts. And then I say that also because of the administration. Based on, everybody don't like what they do, but they are making it harder for them to hire people from overseas at cheaper costs.
Did you see how much they were saying that the visa was going to cost?
$100,000, I believe. Yeah, because you could just pay.
Do you know how talented you about to have to be to get that now?
I don't think so. I think you might as well just hire the person at $80,000 for it versus trying to bring in the person for the lower pay.
But I will. The workers will finally probably start to get that pay that they deserve, quote unquote, deserve if they're skilled. Yeah,
I agree.
All right, you ready to talk about Miss Stallion?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so I have the forensics behind Megan and Milagro. So let's talk about this from a forensic perspective. So if you've been seeing Megan Thee Stallion and the blogger Milagro Cooper, a.k.a. Mobs World, pop up in your feed, this is not just internet beef. It's actually legal. Megan is suing her for defamation, harassment, and cyber stalking. Now, the backstory is what matters. So Megan and her team is saying that Milagro has been running a smear campaign since the Tory Lanez trial. So she's saying that they've been spreading lies, they've been boosting conspiracy theories, and there was a deepfake video that used AI, to make it look like Megan was in a sex tape. So with that false sex tape video made with AI, Milagro liked it publicly, and then I guess she told her followers to go look at it. Like, I don't know what she was thinking about that, but where it started to get spicy was when you're being sued, right, or even when a lawsuit is about to drop, they tell you that you need to preserve your evidence. And guess what? That's not what happened. She was deleting texts. She was clearing her DMs. She tried to pull all of that, and she got caught, basically. So Megan's team sent her a preservation letter basically saying, hold on to all of your messages, especially anything with Tory Lanez or his daddy, Sonstar Peterson. Instead of preserving it, she allegedly did the exact opposite. So the court brought in a forensic firm, FTI Consulting, who used Cellebrite to image her phone. I actually used that when I was in digital forensics. Popular tool. So if you don't know, Cellebrite is a government-level technology that recovers deleted messages, timestamps, app data, basically everything that you thought was gone. And what they found out was that over 2,300 deleted messages were found from just 1 week, the same week that she was told not to delete anything. Her entire WhatsApp history was wiped clean, and all of the missing messages lined up perfectly with texts from Tory's dad. So on December 22nd, 2022, she texted Tory and his dad, and then right after those convos, hundreds of messages basically were showing as vanished from the digital forensic expert perspective. And then again on October 30th and November 6th, his dad texted her and said, call me, and boom, they noticed more gaps, more deleted messages there. And they could all see that because every iPhone message has what's called a row ID, and that's basically a digital serial number for every text. So when there's a gap in that sequence, obviously it's going to illustrate that something's been deleted. So when they saw those missing row IDs, thousands of them, it told them that those messages were intentionally being removed. So they also found some screenshots in her recently deleted folder showing a chat with his dad waiting to be permanently erased. I think it's after like 30 days. So they found that as well. So basically she was caught red-handed with her own phone. Now, if that wasn't enough, they found evidence that she used WhatsApp up until March 2025, and then she deleted the app before handing the phone over, which means that all of those conversations on WhatsApp are gone as well. Now, in forensics terms, they call that spoliation of evidence, which basically is you destroying or hiding information that could be used in a case. And the judge basically said that she acted in bad faith, meaning that it wasn't a mistake, it wasn't a accident, it was actually something that she did deliberately. So now she's facing monetary sanctions, and when this goes to trial, the jury will be told that they can assume the deleted messages were basically bad for the case, which is why they were removed in the first place.
I feel like, too bad she can't afford bronze steel, but if she could, she probably could get out of it, because deletion is not necessarily an admission of guilt, but it does paint that narrative, because in court, it's not about what you know about what you can prove. Mm-hmm. And like, can they prove whatever she said to Sunstar and everybody else? But I remember, like, I found out about her 3 years ago. And I remember the incident with the AI thing. And I think what happens a lot of times too is people are ignorant of their followings.
That's what it was. It was. It wasn't that she just liked it. I think it was the fact that she liked it and she told her.
I remember going to that stream though.
Yeah.
What I remember from what she said, it was like, y'all tell me what y'all think about this, but I don't really think that was necessarily done in the most malicious way because she makes her money off of that type of content.
Yeah.
But I think what happens is, based on her content, that's how people could take it as, because afterwards, like when they found out, like, oh, this is not real, which is, to me, it's kind of easy to see when someone's AI, but we have trained eyes. And she doesn't. I think that's where like she messed up at. It's a couple of things I think that she messed up at, but it's hilarious. And now when you was talking about this, when was that? When I was in Shreveport, July, I believe. I think I was in Shreveport either in July or August, and I was listening to a deposition because they tried to rope in academics with like one of Meg's.
I do remember.
When I tell you, wipe the floor with that lady, like literally. Because they don't have anything on them. Like, you don't take anything from nobody, so they can't never say that somebody paid you to do something or whatever. So his stuff is always more, like, music-based, based on people from actual labels and not personal, like, relationships. But it was hilarious. Like, she was getting so frustrated because she was trying to corner him. He's like, you can't do this to me. Because I think he – and this is not really about act, but he was like, hey – people, I want y'all to know I did go to Rutgers. Like, I'm not like a stupid guy. And so that, and this is the things now where people are just like, hey, you need to know how this works. And how can you, for who don't know, there's a recently deleted tab to delete it.
But my thing is, I feel like it was a master class on digital forensics, because to someone who doesn't know, you thought you deleted it and there's no way that they can recover it. And I think I feel like I said this a while back, but anything that you do, leaves mm-hmm. a trail. No, opening the message, open up the camera, it doesn't matter. All of that has an audit trail. And with the right tool, clearly you can see thousands of rows are missing, and it's hard to sell the story at that point. So I thought it was interesting and a cool case to highlight from a digital forensic perspective, in terms of you thinking you deleted something and then you find out that there could potentially be more to the story. And then why did you delete it?
Yeah, nah, for sure. And I also want to know, do you think Apple was going to play ball if they need to subpoena stuff from iCloud servers?
Nope.
So that's like...
Especially not in this case. Because what was the bigger case? It was a shooting or something.
I can't remember. But yeah, you're right. Like, they are about the privacy. But that's like a rock and a slippery... Like, rocking between a hard place when you think about it. If you want me to be totally honest about this... It's similar, it's akin to Tasha K versus Cardi B. Cardi B knew she had more money than Tasha K, so I got all day to play with you because you play with me. That's literally kind of what it is. I'm not finna make this a whole what happened and the forensics, but the forensics of the main case don't line up. So that's why there's so much, that's the reason why like this situation is happening right now, is so much controversy of like nobody really knows what happens because of chain of custody was not done the correct way that night.
I don't think that people think about social media and all of these digital footprints and things that, I mean, people aren't thinking about it. They're just living their everyday life. But in cases like this, especially when there's a conflict, a heated exchange, especially in the world that we live in today, you have to be careful about the things that you say and do, especially if you have all of these people, you know, around you, because celebrities are suing people for defamation and more now than ever before.
And I'm glad, well, not glad, but since we're talking about one of the things you talked about with Meg was the AI video. And also I want to say, I think she's full of it because I think her and Clay's relationship is too performative. Anytime in real life I've seen people that's actually like together for real, not trying to look good to everybody else, they ain't post every day to show, oh, I'm making you fish or spaghetti or this. Like, they didn't post that. So, I ain't jacking that. Ah, shoot.
What were you about to say?
The Verge trying to make me read this thing. Let me see something. Pretty much I had an article about OpenAI been running into, like, you know, those issues with Sora because all the copyright stuff. and what they thought was going to happen.
Not that.
Let's see. This, I'm not going to lie. This was, let me show you. I'm going to play a little bit of this because this is what I think. I ain't going to say expanded because you've been had this stuff going on, but let me see something. I'm not going to do that. I was going to play TaylorMade Freestyle quickly. But here you go. I found another one. OpenAI Sora is in serious trouble. Just over a week ago, OpenAI launched its latest text-to-video generation app, a TikTok Live experience dubbed Sora 2 that lets users churn out a tidal wave of AI slop. It didn't take long for users to use the app to generate videos of copyrighted and widely known characters from OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, barbecuing the Pikachu, a full episode of South Park, the SpongeBob SquarePants cooking up blue meth in the style of AMC's iconic Breaking Bad series. The hype was so immense that Sora rocketed to the top of Apple's App Store rankings in a matter of just 2 days. After all, who wouldn't want to see Super Mario involved in a high-speed police? Who wouldn't want to see Super Mario involved in a high-speed police pursuit? But it's quickly turned into a rocky road. In the days leading up to the launch, the Wall Street Journal reported that rights holders would have to opt out of having their copyrighted material shown in the app, only for OpenAI to reverse course soon after the launch. We will give rights holders more granular control over generation of characters similar to the opt-in model for likeness, but with additional controls, Altman wrote in an update on his blog last week. The cat was already out of the bag, though sparking what's likely to be immense legal drama for OpenAI on Monday. The Motion Picture Association, a U.S. trade association that represents major film studios, released a scorching statement urging OpenAI to take immediate and decisive action to stop the app from infringing on copyrighted media. Meanwhile, OpenAI appears to have come down hard on what kind of text prompts can be turned into AI slop on Sora, implementing sweeping new guardrails presumably meant to appease furious rights holders and protect their intellectual property. As a result, power users experienced major whiplash that's tarnished the launch's image even among fans. It's a lose-lose moment for OpenAI's flashy new app. Either aggravates right holders by allowing mass copyrighted infringement or turn it into yet another mind-numbing screensaver generating experience like Meta's Wally Walk vibes.
Yikes.
So somebody said it's official Sora 2 is completely boring and useless with these copyright restrictions. Some videos should be considered fair use, one Reddit user lamented. Others accuse OpenAI of abusing copyright to hype up its new app. And I'm not going to go through like the rest of this. It's like a long thing. But, I mean, if we even go back to freaking – I've seen videos of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King having rap battles.
Put some guardrails in place because these people don't know how to act. For real. Put the copyrights in place. Put them in place.
This the definition of should have never gave y'all N-words AI.
Like, give somebody an inch, they're going to take a mile every time unless you block the ability from them to be able to do that. I'm not shocked. People can't wait to make the most ludicrous things that they can think of quickly because AI is doing it for them.
Yeah, and the fact that, granted, we know we see Malcolm X and Martin Luther King doing something that it's, you know, it's not, like, legit. But in another event of something else happening, like, everybody don't know, like these young kids, my kids don't know about this stuff yet. They might think it's real.
No. Imagine you thinking that Martin Luther King and Malcolm X was out here rap battling each other because you ain't learning it in school. That's a whole nother story for a whole nother day. I have one final article. Meta glasses. So.
Your fave.
My favorite. So Meta just dropped the new Ray-Ban display glasses. The cost is $799 before taxes. I thought I was going to be getting a pair. I will not be getting a pair until they go down. That is pretty steep for me. But Mark Zuckerberg basically showed them off, and it was really giving, like he had just rediscovered the metaverse in the video. But I do think it's one of their biggest moves since the headset. Now, these aren't your regular smart glasses. These have an actual built-in display, which means that you can literally see your text messages. You can watch videos, read directions, or check notifications that are floating in front of your eyes. Now, where it gets crazier is that the glasses work with something called a neural band. So it's called a Meta Neural Band, which is basically just a wristband that picks up electrical signals from your hand, and it lets you control things with those small gestures. So you can scroll, swipe, select stuff. It kind of reminds me of the same technology you get with the Quest. Same thing with the wrapped around your arm. So instead of you needing to reach for your phone, you can flick your fingers and boom, your message will pop up in the corner of your screen. Now, inside of the technology, the folks at iFixit did a breakdown and they found that Meta partnered with Loomis and Scott for the lenses. So instead of the old school diffractive wave guides that bend light, they're using geometric reflective wave guides. So it's basically like a high tech mirror that bounces the images basically in a way like a projector would do. So it's clearly going to be bright and visible for you. Now, the lineup is that there are three versions. So you have the Ray-Ban Display, which is $799. You have the Oakleys, which are $499. And then you have the Oakleys are for athletes. And then you have the $379 Ray-Ban Meta Gen 2. That might be the one I'm going to get. It's given the $379 version. But the display glasses are the flagship full AR style screen where you get that neural control of the band. The classic Ray-Ban frames still look good while providing you with some of the futuristic capabilities. And then you have the Vanguards, which people who are snowboarding, for example, or biking, basically some sort of extreme sport. Now, they have a better battery than we saw previously. They have a 9-hour battery life, and they are also able to capture video in 3K. Plus, you can link them up with your Garmin watches to track your heart rate and your stats using Meta AI. Now, the Ray-Ban Meta Gen 2s are designed, I guess, with creators in mind. So you still have that battery life. You get 8 hours on a charge. It still shoots in 3K Ultra HD. So if you're vlogging or going live, that might be a good toy for you. But the glasses also could potentially feel a little bit smarter to you because they're not only a camera, not only is it a microphone and displaying, but it also has that AI-powered assistant in there as well. So you can record your content hands-free, giving Meta a new way to be able to watch you and I guess like everyone around you. People are already calling them glass holes again, like they did when Google Glass came out. And honestly, aware of the Meta Ray-Bans, people do assume that you're recording them, which I think is interesting, right? Because if I have my phone out, are you assuming that I'm recording you? But if you see me with glasses on, you're assuming I'm recording you. But you're also assuming that you're cool enough for me to want to just randomly record you, being that you're a stranger. So I do absolutely see the negative connotation that they have because people do feel like, oh my God, are you recording me? I seen something on TikTok of this girl who was getting a wax done and she was freaked out that her waxer had on the Meta Ray-Bans. And I was thinking about this from the lens of the waxer. They probably, if there are prescription glasses for that waxer, they probably weren't thinking, you know, nothing of it because it's an everyday lens that they're putting on their face. But I could also see how that can make someone feel uncomfortable if they were in that situation. So I don't know. Something to think about there. I personally would love to see how the version 2s are, the battery life there, because I love my glasses, but the battery does suck on the first version. But I knew they were coming out with a new pair because they were on sale for a long time this summer, and I was like, they're probably on sale because they're trying to get rid of all that inventory to make space for the new version. So three different price ranges to choose from, $799 for the displays, $499 for the Oakleys, and then $379 for the Gen 2s. So if you're interested and you have purchased them, or if you have the version 1s, what do you think about them? Let us know in the comments. I don't know if I would wear them every day. I do like mine, though, but I don't know if I didn't commit to getting my prescription put in the glasses because I wanted to wear mine more for content and as sunglasses versus an everyday frame. I don't think I would put my prescription in there for it to be an everyday frame. I just don't see that happening for me personally. But all in all, I do really like them. I do really enjoy them. And hopefully Apple makes a pair and they keep that price point cute because they be going out of pocket when it comes to the price points.
If they can give...
They should have made glasses instead of making the VR headset.
If they can give the video quality of like something like the DJI. Mm-hmm. I'm saying DJI. I think you got a winner right there.
What, Apple?
Anybody. Mm-hmm. Because the biggest thing for me when it comes to vlogging now is like sometimes I don't want to get this out and do this. Like I'd much rather.
I like the fact that if you are recording that you can clearly see that there's a light going so that people feel like they have an indication that they're being recorded. But my thing is, if I pull out my phone and start recording you, you're not going to see a flash unless I put the flash on.
Yeah. Do you use the functionality that lets you hear, like, music and stuff?
Yeah.
How is it? Like,
10 out of 10. You can't hear it. Like, if I was sitting right here and I had my glasses on, I could have the volume all the way up to me. You wouldn't be able to hear it. Nobody who I've been around while I've either listened to audiobooks or listening to music, they can never hear it.
Yeah, because at the gym one day, I was trying to get this dude's attention.
And you almost forget.
And I realized, I was like, he got them glasses on. That's why he can't hear me.
Yeah, because you almost forget that it's coming out right here. Like, you can hear it, but you almost forget.
Right. Nah, sure. I want to do a follow-up on the Salesforce, since we talked about Salesforce last week. Mm-hmm. Salesforce said it won't pay extortion demand in its 1 billion records breach. And I was looking up stuff from like Birdman when he told the Breakfast Club, say, y'all finishing, you done? I'm talking to all three of y'all.
Real quick, did you see Young Money, Cash Money finna do a versus battle?
Well, Cash Money and No Limit.
Oh. Who did I say?
You said Young Money, Cash Money.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, but I don't know if they regulating it to...
Is it going to be an in-person experience? Because I don't want to see anything else virtual.
I think it's going to be in-person in Vegas or something from what I saw. But I wonder what they...
Is Nicki finna be there and Drake and Tyga? I don't think so. And Mac Main and...
I don't think so, because I think that wouldn't be fair. I want to say they're going to have to keep it to like the Hot
That's
Boys
Young
and
Money.
Juvie. And they are signed to Cash
Wait,
Money.
No. Was it Cash Money? Or it's Cash it wasn't Money. Young Money?
Young Money is under Cash Money. But all of them was Cash Money. But I don't know. Like, I think that's kind of cheating. But if they want to do it, by all means, they can. It's going to be... It's supposed to be like 20 for 20. So I don't know if they can go for peak or whatever.
Wait, who is Cash Limit?
Cash Money?
Lord Jesus.
No Limit.
I'm acting like an auntie.
No Limit. I'm not the...
No, who's there? Like...
Ain't Mystical still locked up?
I hope so. He's a lunatic.
But it'll be Mystical, Silk, Master P.
Don't nobody want to hear them.
Snoop? Nah.
Okay, Snoop maybe.
What's her name? Mia X?
I don't know her.
They got a lot of people on No Limit.
But they're not killing Young Money.
You got to start saying Young Money.
Lord Cash Money. Where Lil Wayne going to be at? On what side of the fence?
But this you got to understand, though. Wayne prominence was like after No Limit and them did their thing. Like, come on now. When we heard, let me see something.
I'm finna look. Cash, No Limit. No Limit?
No Limit Records. Like,
who is No Limit Records?
This is gonna be a dub. This is gonna be a dub.
No Limit Studios. What's up?
Who this is?
Look at this rapper Forte. Who is this?
Oh, this P.
P?
Yeah, this P.
P?
Yeah.
P, let me hear you say, This ain't no motherfucking P, man.
It's gonna be a dub. What they got for this?
A lot of songs.
No, this was crazy down here when it came out.
Well, I went down here. I was up north.
Like, Cash, like, No Limit was, I was running
No
at
Limit,
the same time.
It says Snoop Dogg, whoever Mercedes is, Silk the Shocker, Mystical, Mia X, Mac, C Murda, Magic, Romeo, mm-hmm. Fiend, Cain and Abel, Soulja Slim. I don't want to hear no music by all of them.
Nah, they got hits, though. You forget Master P was like really doing his thing.
Master P was doing his thing, but like.
Like he gonna come. He might. He should start off with this.
Time for the national anthem. What song is this? I feel like. Is this Snoop Dogg?
Master P? Get him up. I mean you body by. Like he gonna come out with something like that. But you still can do. They still can win off this alone though.
Hey.
Like
you been seeing them Eastern Stars? Lord, that probably ain't even the right name. Them old men. Be stepping to this. Mm-mm. You really want? I have to show you a video before I go.
Cause you know they, you know TikTok then recently made it's what song is it? It's
You've seen these videos. You about to start laughing.
Oh, that's what it is. It's TikTok that made this song. What you call it?
What's the name of that song? Did you just play?
That was Here I Go. But you know, TikTok didn't make this go hot again. So they got, they can play all this to be for like No Limit. Shake your ass. Watch yourself. And hold on now. Hold on now, because this gonna come out. And we gotta get back on the, what you call it? But look.
We gotta get back on our.
This gonna come out. This is a dub too. Yo, Chow. I'm telling you, you sleep. You're going to have to do your research.
Hey, turn it up.
Oh, yeah. You got to go do your research.
I'll listen for this song.
Like, you're going to have to go. And then Soulja Slim is him, too. I didn't listen to a lot of Soulja Slim, but Soulja Slim is him. So
of course, I can't even find the freaking video right now. I'm going to find
what,
it later.
What video?
Of the older men to be stepping to that song. Here I go.
But let me go to the Salesforce real quick before we get into these voicemails. Salesforce said they're not going to pay the $1 billion. The tech group making the demands began their campaign in May when they made voice calls to organizations storing data on the Salesforce platform Google owned Mandy and said in June, the English-speaking callers would provide a pretense that necessitated the target connect an attacker control app to their Salesforce portal. Amazingly, but not surprisingly, many of the people who received the call complied. So we covered all this, so we're going to go to this right here. Early this month, the group created a website that named Toyota, FedEx, and 37 other Salesforce customers whose data was stolen in the campaign and all the number of records recovered. Scattered Lapsus Hunter's claim was 989.4M. The site called on the Salesforce to begin negotiations for a ransom amount of all your customers' data would be leaked. And I think I saw that the FBI seized that domain like this week or today.
They did.
Yeah, so I saw that.
They definitely did. I was going to put that article in.
And in an email Wednesday, a Salesforce representative said the company is spurning the demand. I can confirm Salesforce will not engage, negotiate with, or pay any extortion demand, the representative wrote. The confirmation came a day after Bloomberg reported that Salesforce told customers in an email that it won't pay the ransom. The email went on to say that Salesforce had received credible threat intelligence, indicating a group known as Shiny Hunters planned to publish data stolen in a series of attacks on customer Salesforce portals. The refusal comes amid a continuing explosion in the number of ransomware attacks on organizations around the world. The reason these breaches keep occurring is the hefty sums the attackers receive in returning for decrypted, encrypted data and are promising not to publish data online. Global ransom payments totaled $813 million last year, down from $1.1 billion in 2023. Ooh. Security firm DeepStrike estimated the group that breached drug distributor Cencora alone received a whopping $75 million in ransomware payments. Bloomberg reported, citing unnamed people familiar with the matter. Man, that's a lot. Them boys eating. Yeah, so they're not going to pay, and I'm glad they're not going to pay because if you keep on paying, all people going to do is keep on trying to find people to breach and get money from them.
That part. And you might pay them, and they still might not give it back to you. That's the gag.
Facts. That's big facts. But now to have some fun. We finally got people to buy in and do voicemails. So let's see if we got any new ones. Okay. So we're starting with the first one. You ready?
Yep.
Okay.
Hey, guys. First, let me say thank you for giving back to the community and everything that you all do. We all really appreciate it. My question is, for somebody who has about 2 years and 4 months into cybersecurity, doing vulnerability management, was working inside of a SOC, and was let go from a company, how would I be able to reboot myself and get into GRC? Or what would you suggest that I do to get into GRC? Because I wanted to do more of a GRC role. Thank you for, and I don't have any certs. Let me just say that also. So thank you.
Before we answer that, let me make sure he didn't ask us the same thing longer in this next one. Or maybe he did it by accident.
Maybe.
Question is, for somebody who has about 2 years and 4 months.
Okay, yeah, so he pretty much reacted the same thing and then went twice, I think. That's a good question. I always tell people I think vulnerability management really actually flows right into.
I was going to say it flows well. I'm not the person to answer the question on what you should do in specific because that is not my ministry and that's not the transition that I made. But knowing what I did in vulnerability management and what it is a good segue or leeway into making your way to GRC. And I'll pass it over to our career coach.
I'll just say the biggest things would be, because I was having this conversation with my coworker because we do incident response, but a lot of the things we do in IR uphold and make sure the controls put in place by government.
Certain frameworks and standards, yeah.
We uphold those, and we actually do a lot of things because of those things. So all we would have to do is figure out.
If he was on the vulnerability side, though, he might not even know the incident response piece.
Well, even what he's doing, I mean, even whatever patching. they were patching or scanning for vulnerability management was a part of whatever framework or mm-hmm. whatever thing.
And so, the patch schedule and all that good stuff. So I guess he has to do it's going to be difficult. If you're still cool with somebody maybe that works there, you can ask larger questions to better understand how you can talk about some of the things. Because they do relate, and you're right.
So this is what I would do. The easy thing first is use Copilot, Gemini, ChatGPT, and look at your resume and skills and see how it's in line up with. You can probably find a couple of GRC job descriptions and paste it in there and see how does your experience line up with this. And if it doesn't line up well, that means you may need to do some more research on the things you did that were related to GRC and see how that lines up and then start familiarizing yourself with those frameworks and those processes and some of those other tools and get good at presenting data and talking to people. And you should be fine because you'll be fairly more technical than some of the non-technical people getting to GRC. So to make a long story short, you're going to have to create a strategic plan, and that's going to probably require more probably networking than actual like technical skills in order to get there.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say, David. All right. I don't know who this next person is. Let me see. Maybe it's Terrence.
So the company that I work for, they're currently paying for my degree, and it's going to be in cloud computing. And so far, I plan to stay with the company, but they don't have an IT position open in the company, and I don't want to leave because if I leave, then they won't finish paying for my degree. So I guess my question is should I stay with the company and continue to earn my degree with them? It's going to be a bachelor's, or should I just leave the company and go ahead and get a entry-level IT position like help desk?
I'm going to say stay with the company and let them pay for that degree as much as you can until you secure something. If you have to pivot, but if you're getting a bachelor's, I don't know where you're at in your journey. Let's say you got 2 more years left. Potentially a role can be open in that time frame or a new role developed or things of that sort. So I would work on establishing relationships with people that are in those roles so that they know that you're interested, they know what you're studying. You know, maybe you can have a coach or a mentor that they can serve as for you. And then I'm never upset with leaving a place for more or a better opportunity. But while you're there, make the most of what you have. If they're paying for your degree and you don't want to take out loans or fast for whatever it may be to cover the rest, then it may be worthwhile staying. But if you're okay with your income right now and you're able to get someone to be like your mentor or your coach and you're able to shadow someone that's doing that, it might be worth staying.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with everything she said because I don't know what you currently make now or what you currently do. And underrated thing that you can do is use LinkedIn or use the internal company directory and see who does the jobs you want to do and talk to them.
Yep.
That's like the best way. A lot of times I have consultations and people have not let the people who they work with what their career goals are. And it's much cheaper for them to keep you than to have to bring in some more talent. So I would say go that route. But yeah, if you can or if you find another job that would let you do tuition reimbursement like for a shorter time and you don't have to stay at the company like 2 years or something like that afterwards. And I think that's read the fine details of your tuition reimbursement. And make sure after you get this degree, do you not have to stay there X amount of years in a role that you don't want to be in? And then you've now kind of like 3 years past like of not being in a tech-related role. So find that out first and then start acting accordingly. That way, if you got to leave prematurely, you got some bread set aside to help pay some of that back. That's what I would say.
Yeah. We talked about in the episode earlier today, but I did leave one of my jobs that was paying for tuition reimbursement. There wasn't any fine print of that sort, so I was okay with knowing that I was going to have to cover it for better opportunity. But if I would have been able to make better progress internally linking up with someone, I probably would have stayed, but I wasn't, and I was over it. So you have to play your cards right, especially in this job market.
Right. Let me see if this is the same person or not. Okay. I don't think so. Let's see.
Can you tell me the significance in the certification Cloud Plus? If I were to try to be a cloud engineer, or rather a cloud support engineer, would Cloud Plus certification help me any? I know that I more than likely would have to do projects and have some type of skills to do a cloud support job, but I just wonder, does the cloud support certification hold as much weight as like a AWS certification? Let's say like that AWS cloud practitioner.
No.
Yeah, don't get the Cloud Plus. It's really a waste of time. You better off going to one of the vendors.
I was going to say the same. Like, choose a cloud platform and get one of their certifications because the Cloud Plus is just going to teach you about the cloud in general and not specific to one of the potential platforms that you could be working on. So I would maybe if you are not buying and you're just looking at free content, maybe, but I wouldn't invest my money into that versus, like you said, an AWS. I would invest somewhere where I could actually land and I could know how to use those tools.
Yeah, I agree. And I would go back and watch some of the episodes I did with people that are in the cloud and cloud engineers. So my guy, Big Cloud Tech, Cloud Tech Big Unk. There you go. My boy D'Amico, what episode I did with Broadus from Level Up in Tech. My girl Miyosha for cloud support engineering. And pretty soon a past client of mine, Travell, he's going to be talking about his cloud journey.
Just know you're going to get technical in that. In cloud engineering, it is a technical role. So,
and I know you left another voicemail. So while we're talking, like, you definitely should go learn networking and learn Linux for sure. It's not going to be as simple as just getting a certification to get into the cloud. So following up from your last question, you might as well go ahead and probably get help desk support or some type of role so you can get some type of technical skill set into where if you move into one of those support engineer roles, you'll fare much better.
Yeah.
And this is the third one. Let's see.
Can you tell me why WGU University has so many certifications in the cloud computing program and other IT programs? And can you tell me what I can do with all those certifications? A+. Security Plus, Network Plus, Cloud Plus, Linux Essentials. Those are the ones so far that I have earned.
We gonna both tell you to stay away from that A+.
Well, he's in WGU, so he has no choice but to get the certification.
You have to get them?
You got to take them.
Oh, I thought it was optional. Like you learn the content.
I think
you can
test out some of that stuff based on maybe what your work experience is, I think.
I can't speak for that because I didn't go there, but I would stay away from that A+.
In general, a lot of certifications can pull you away from what you actually want to do.
But Linux would be good for him.
Yeah, the Linux Essentials
Security
good,
Plus would
the,
be good for him.
I think the issue is that they make them learn them so fast that he may not be retaining
facts. The stuff if it's an 8-week, 10-week type of situation, yeah.
Yeah, so he may not be retaining it like he wants to. But all in all, I probably would say that just do what you can. You'll have to learn more outside of WGU because right now they're just putting you in classes to get the certs. And that's another reason why we talk about more traditional schools being better for people with no tech background because you don't have to focus so much on auto certifications. You'll be focused more so on theory,
and you have projects, better capstones. A longer time in class, too. I think 12 weeks. I think it's 12 weeks.
Right.
So you have a longer time to retain, learn, ask questions. An 8-week course is very intense.
You know what? We're going to come back to the voicemails because I think, let me see something. This is probably the one TikTok we're going to do today. Let's see.
I'm so thirsty. Wow.
Man, I can't find it. It pretty much was a young lady and she was talking about another reason why it's not that much of a benefit for you in WGU is here. I think here she is right here.
So I saw someone ask a question about like what happened to all of those people who were doing a day in the life of.
That's not it. Scratch that.
Someone who works.
That's not it. It was a video where pretty much she was talking about how you'll be more beneficial for you to do a regular degree program because you have more opportunities to do internships versus trying to fast track and get out of WGU so fast, and I thought I bookmarked it.
I will also piggyback off of what you just said and say that, so for example, for me, when my master's program was closely aligned with like industry certifications, and so getting a Security Plus was more of a walk in the park for me than maybe someone who didn't have the education that was kind of aligned to some of that content. We learned a lot about the cloud. We learned a lot about security in general. So when I was taking the exam, I was like, oh, I knew this. I didn't know it was going to be like this. So I think your curriculum should also be aligned not only to the skill sets that companies are looking for, but also to standards in some of these certs. Now, obviously, they can't touch everything, but like I see a lot of places that'll say like our curriculum is in alignment with the CISSP or the CISM or whatever it may be. But that's also something to think about if you are considering going the education route as well, is how does that coursework line up with things that are actually happening in the field? And I've been seeing some really, really good cyber programs lately.
Yeah, for sure. And we're actually going to be, we got some stuff coming up for some really good cyber programs. We're just going to keep that on the low. And I would just also say, I know WGU does have a physical location, but I know it's more renowned for the online program. But the benefits of like being able to go to your campus or at least being close to it is the benefits that a lot of times they have relationship with local employers and how it's easier to get jobs that way too versus being so online. Like it's not the same thing, but it's one of the reasons why some people are against remote work in the sense that you can scale up faster by being in office versus being remote and the opportunities that you might get sitting next to somebody or your manager's manager is there and you met them and now you got visibility versus being remote. It's kind of one of those arguments right there when it comes to being online and school and that. So maybe we could do like a deep dive on that one day, online school versus traditional school. What are the benefits? Who's more successful?
I wish I would have went in person. I did completely 100% remote, and I did myself a disservice, and I struggled a lot unnecessarily when I could have taken a couple of classes or even, like, I should have taken networking in person, period.
Yeah, but we can depend on that because that's a good thing to kind of go through and actually do some really good research on and figure out. I don't know how they quantify like who would be more successful, but maybe like early career or who has more opportunities earlier on versus the people that don't. So I think that'll be cool. And now let's get to Joby Manano. I think that's how you say their name. Let's go.
Hello, Textual Chatter and Cyber Shorty. My name is Joby Manano. You probably see me in your comments a lot and also on LinkedIn. I've I really look up to Dave Johnson, and like I try and use him as an example. But that's beside the point. The point while I'm trying to reach out to you guys today is because I just started a role as a junior. That's my question. I know I have to learn Python, but I don't know where to start except in school. But like, what are some skills I should learn to grow from a junior analyst to a senior analyst to hopefully a cyber security engineer? I'm only 22 years old, by the way. Let me add that. I'm only 22 years old. I just turned 22 in September, and I'm thankful that I'm already working in cybersecurity, making above 60K a year, but that's besides the point. I want to know what can I do next to move on next to hopefully a senior analyst and hopefully a engineer. Thank you again for this time.
Okay, so let me hit an air horn for him.
Congratulations on the role and happy belated birthday, and I'll let you start.
So I couldn't hear exactly what role he said.
He said a junior analyst.
Yeah, but what kind of analyst?
That's
what I'm saying. I feel
like, you know, the first time I didn't catch it, but the second time he said.
It went out when he said it. So yeah. That's what I'm like. I don't know if he said security analyst.
I think he did say a junior security analyst, and he wants to be a senior security analyst and then a cyber engineer.
So the easiest thing that probably helped him is to figure out what to learn is. So he says he wants to be a security engineer. You got to first figure out what type of security engineer, because they can do various different things. You got some that are just platform security engineers over certain platforms. You got security engineers that are like doing different things. But go find those job descriptions. Go find some security engineers to talk to. Like, since you said you know Day, this would be a great question of the day. Figure out, hey, what type of Python scripts and stuff like that, or things that have you solved with scripting in the past, and then that's how you start. Already got your stuff in school you got to learn, but then you start learning this stuff. So now you know how to have these tools that you fixed and that you worked on.
I would also say is trying to work with the people that you're probably sending work to that you can't figure out as well, to see what was the resolution or how they handled a situation at work that you could potentially add to your arsenal, or something that maybe if it's something that you don't even know about or you never heard of, they can introduce you to that concept or whatever it may be. So that would be my advice there. And like he said, definitely start to beef up your network. You're 21. You're already in the field. You're making good money. I would definitely start to expand my network, because the more expansive it becomes, the more insight you'll be able to gain. You can even YouTube it, TikTok it, LinkedIn it, whatever works best for you. But I would start making those connections and not just following people, like actually engaging with these people so you can start to have conversations with them too.
Yeah, and he's 22.
And eating down.
And yeah, I think that's like a general thing that you could do. And also, Abdi talked about this platform called Windsurf. You can use AI to help you speed up, to teach you Python in a better way that maybe you can't learn in school, that can kind of break it down for you in a better way. So I would say try things like that and just try to solve problems. That was always my issue when it came to scripting. It's like, hey, I can learn Hello World, but I don't know how to make this practical, so it sticks with me. And so finding ways it can stick with you since you just started your job, as you do your job, you'll start seeing tedious processes that require like too much clicking. See how you can automate some of the things with Python, and then that'll give you a framework of some things that you can build out to lead you to that engineer path. So I hope this helps. And he left one more message, so let's go ahead and hear what he got to say.
I done drunk so much, I'ma have to call a lilf. I done drunk so much, I'ma have to call a lilf. You ain't gotta do too much.
They got on Sperry's. They ate down.
They just trying to be like us.
Sperry's with the socks.
I done drunk so much, I'ma have to call a lilf.
That dude look like that 2011, 2010.
That's cool. Actually, I think that like transpired about like 08 or whatever. But
it wasn't that long ago.
It was. I've been out of school, high school, 15 years. I know. It's crazy, ain't it? Man, I'm so mad I cannot find that thing that I saved. Okay, let me see. This is one. I think I want to react to one TikTok, and then we're going to let y'all guys go. Some recruiter in It says, controversial, but take the first job offer you get, which I really don't agree with, but let's see what she say. You ready?
Mm-hmm. Controversial opinion, but if you're job hunting, take the first offer that you're given, because the job that you really want, they may go with someone else. I've been a recruiter for 10 years and have seen many offers fall through. So secure the bag first and keep interviewing. Nothing is guaranteed. Don't stop interviewing. Controversial opinion.
Okay, so I agree with from that standpoint.
And that's what I did when I was starting out. I was desperate, and just like she's like, I was still gonna continue to search for the perfect fit, but I was like, whatever comes my way first, I'm gonna give it a try.
Yeah, I'm announcing it right now. I got a client. It's funny because it's on the heels of the guy that wanted to be funny on my LinkedIn.
Screaming.
He was pretty much got laid off in June. Got with me in what was that? July, I think. Samir got me in July. We did everything, revamped everything, and he was making $65K. So now he's got his first offer at $135K, hybrid in Houston.
Period.
And he's also interviewing for a couple of other roles that could be paying a little bit more on a contract basis. But I said, we'll just leverage the offer and see if we can get some more bread out of it. But, I mean, you know, we always come with the receipts. I'm king of receipts. That's why I think that's why I got out my body on that, man. I did. If I could have virtually sapped somebody, it would have been him.
I was shocked, Mr. Textual.
What they thought? They acting like they don't know where I'm from.
Keep it cute or put it on mute.
But yeah, man, first of all, shout out to them Broncos. Y'all see what they did to them Eagles. You see the Eagles just lost again because they really not that good. So by the time this come out, my Broncos will beat the Jets. So they will be, I think they'll be 4-2. Yeah, I think they'll be 4-2 at the time after they beat the Jets. And, you know, it's just a thing, man. Shout out to Sean Payton. Shout out to Courtland Sutton. Shout out to Bo Nix, Pat Surtain, Nick Bonito. Everybody on the defense, man. Vance Joseph, y'all doing y'all thing out there. Cyber Shorty, what you want to leave them with?
Not that. I don't speak football. I don't know. Excited to see Bad Bunny perform. That's what I'm going to leave him with. I'm excited to see the entire performance. I think it's going to be a big, grand slam show. I don't have anything too crazy. Have fun.
Yep, and we didn't really cover any cybersecurity awareness tips today, but just want to let you know, anything that you do not want to be recovered, write it on paper, burn it up, do not put it on your phone. It could be recovered.
Period. Celebrate.
And... dang it, I had something I could have ended this out with. Oh, because you were scholar this earlier.
Whoop-dee-doo.
I don't know. I'll figure it out. But, guys, appreciate y'all for tuning in. Like it up. Leave the comments. Super chats. Check us out on the Patreon. We got some exclusive stuff on the Patreon that y'all will definitely find hilarious once you go over there and check it out. But until next time, let's stay textual, and we out. Peace.